supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to Common Space. I'm your host, Jamie J. And today, we're talking about gentrification in the city of Philadelphia. With us is Jim Saxa, a reporter with WHYY's Plan Philly Project, which covers the built environment, developments in real estate, transportation, infrastructure, and historic preservation issues in Philadelphia. I started by asking if he feels like he is a gentrifier or someone who's been gentrified. Jim?
By some people's definition, I am a gentrifier. I'm a renter who lives in Point Breeze, which is a neighborhood that is considered gentrifying right now. So by that definition, I'm a gentrifier. But at the same time, I pay under half of what the median average rent is in Philadelphia. I'm not personally driving up any housing prices there, at least not directly. And it's a question of what is gentrification. And I think that's the big issue is gentrification is a storm cloud of a term. It is nebulous. It is violent at times. And people disagree intensely on how to define it. And depending on how you define it, gentrification can be everything from one of the worst things happening in cities today to one of the best things happening in cities today. And so before you really discuss the merits of it, you have to come up with a workable definition of what is gentrification.
So what is it?
So the term comes from the 1960s in London, and it involves the landed gentry from the countryside moving into London, and that gentrification is people from the burbs essentially moving into the inner city and places that used to be lower income becoming middle and upper income. And so we've applied that more generally to whenever you have an influx of people moving into a city neighborhood from the outside. We'll get to what the outside is in a second. And a appreciation of the median incomes there from usually lower income to a middle or high income even. You know, that is the one thing I think most people can agree on. But again, this is a term that's highly loaded and people have strong feelings about. So from there, what does that mean? You know, the big thing that goes hand in hand with gentrification, I think there are two things, really. We're talking about class and race. It gets wound up into it. Two things that, again, are hot-button issues, and people have really strong opinions about them, right? And so when we talk about the class thing, we're talking about a number of issues, but, you know, very often there's a concern that's primary, especially among, you know, the more empathetic among us, is the concern about displacement. And that when gentrifiers move in the existing neighborhood, a lot of people get forced out because of the economics of the situation. And when we talk about race, what we almost invariably are talking about is a particular neighborhood that is perceived to be predominantly African-American or predominantly Hispanic. And there being an influx of white people from the outside coming in and changing up the racial dynamic of that neighborhood and, you know, through economic means, essentially taking it over. When people talk critically about gentrification, that's where most of the conversation begins and ends, I find. Now, when you talk about what is actually happening in terms of changes in income levels and economic outcomes for existing and new residents in these areas and where these areas are, a lot of those sort of perceptions of gentrification do not hold up to the reality on the ground. But that being said, that doesn't mean that perceptions are invalid or should be just dismissed. I think there are deep underlying issues here that really need to be discussed. But so much of the focus on gentrification, I think, is really slightly misplaced and should be focused on the question of income segregation That is a harder question to deal with, and a question that really gets at the heart of what we talk about in terms of income inequality in this nation. And because that is such a difficult question, people focus on the smaller question that has what they may perceive to be clear good guys and bad guys involved.
So when you talk about income segregation, I want to understand the context in which you're talking about it. Are you saying that gentrification is criticized because of that, because it creates income segregation?
No, I think income segregation should be what we personally should be focused on. And by which I mean, essentially wealthy people live in areas with other wealthy people and poor people live in areas of concentrated poverty. And, studies have shown that when you have intense income segregation, that the impacts on those living in areas of concentrated poverty are devastating, and that the intergenerational mobility of the children, especially that grow up in those areas, are significantly diminished. And, essentially, if you're born into poverty, you will die in poverty, statistically. Obviously, there are a number of, statistics are not, fate. But, when you look at the numbers, it's really tough.
So you're saying that a potential positive impact of gentrification is to desegregate income.
That can be the case. The positive way of thinking about reducing income segregation is that people like to think about offering affordable housing in what are already middle class or upper middle class neighborhoods. Now, that feels good, but the problem is that runs against the basic economic facts of the situation, which are those neighborhoods tend not to have a lot of vacant lots to build any new affordable housing. New affordable housing is expensive even in places where land is cheap. In Philadelphia, PHA spends upwards of $400,000 for each new public house that it builds. That's not really affordable. So to build that in a place where the land value is significantly high in a neighborhood that's already developed doesn't make a lot of economic sense.
So if income desegregation is a potential upside to right. gentrification, is it realistic to think that a wealthy person wants to live next to a poor person?
Well, so that's the interesting thing about gentrification, is that you see that happening. We live in Pointe Prise, and there are incredibly large homes being built that are going for $500,000, $600,000 next to the small row home I live in, which recently sold for $189,000, which was significantly more than a couple of years ago it would have in that neighborhood. And, essentially there are people that are lawyers at major law firms making six figures moving into this neighborhood and living next to people that are on fixed incomes, that are working minimum wage jobs. And so they are willing to in that way. But they're willing to because they're essentially making an economic trade-off. They're buying significantly more house in that neighborhood with brand new amenities than they could afford in one of the already established neighborhoods, to use the realtor's lingo there, or than they could in the suburbs.
So have you seen in Pointe Prise a community being built amongst people of differing economic statuses?
My personal experience, we moved in and we participate in the block party every year around Labor Day and that sort of stuff. Say hi to my neighbors. My neighbors are predominantly African American. Their homeowners have been there for a while. And because they are homeowners that are not on fixed incomes, they are very much okay with the gentrification of the neighborhood. It has, for them, a particularly good positive impact. I know a number of people that moved to the neighborhood recently who've gotten involved in the neighbors investing in Child's Elementary, or NICE, which is a parents and friends of group that is fundraising money to invest in the local elementary school. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, they're getting involved. I know other people that have moved to the neighborhood, lawyers that have worked on trying to oppose the sale of Smith School, which was a school shut down a couple years ago and is now, you know, being proposed to be replaced with apartments, I believe. So, you know, there are interactions. But I mean, that being said, I think in a lot of places they occupy similar spaces and we don't really talk a ton. But yeah, you know, there is that divide, and there's certainly the divide in some of the bars that we're in that are in the area.
I was riding in a taxi, and the taxi driver said to me that Philadelphia as a city does not have an adequate tax base to support solid, good, equal education for its children. What role do taxes play in the gentrification process?
I think they play a tremendous role in many regards. One is the city was shrinking for 50 years until 2006. Only since then has the city been growing, with more people coming in than leaving, right? Because of that, the city has been encouraging people to move here in large part through the 10-year tax abatement, which is an abatement on the part of the property that's been built. The abatement does not affect the land value. There are two things that you tax when you talk about taxing the home: the land itself and the building, right? So that's led to a lot of people coming in, fixing up old homes, building new homes on vacant lots, and getting these large 10-year abatements off the bill, which essentially make the homes cheaper, helping to support this influx of people. That being said, one of the key issues that when we talk about gentrification and the concern about displacement is the increase in local land taxes in the area. As more people move into an area, the land itself gets more valuable, so the assessed value of that land goes up. And based off that assessed value, your real estate taxes go up, especially if you haven't renovated recently or you didn't rebuild recently. So if you've been living there for 30 years and all of a sudden all these people start moving in, all of a sudden the value of your land doubles and you cannot afford to live there anymore. That is the major concern about displacement there. That being said, there have been studies in New York and in Philadelphia by a Columbia professor in New York and here the Philadelphia Fed that have suggested that displacement doesn't really happen in the numbers that people might think. And that in fact, gentrifying neighborhoods may actually have fewer people moving out of them than otherwise you would expect. That actually more people stay than would usually go. So like that's a concern. But that being said, you can pinpoint to certain neighborhoods where it's almost impossible to deny that there hasn't been a displacement effect. Most prominent example around here is the area right around the Penn Alexander School. Penn built a elementary school right west of its campus. When they built that in 2001, it was a predominantly lower-income African-American neighborhood. Since then, the median income levels in that neighborhood have doubled, and the percentage of African Americans has gone down by half. So, like, something's happening there, but that's a dramatic example. And because of those dramatic examples, it's tough to, you know, argue that there isn't some sort of displacement effect, despite the mix of data that suggests that it isn't as pronounced usually than what people might think.
Thank you so much, Jim Saxa, for joining us today at Common Space as we explore this idea of gentrification.
Thanks for having me.
Again, that's Jim Saxa, a reporter with WHYY's Plan Philly Project. You've been listening to Common Space, a collaboration between First Person Arts and WHYY. And it's been supported by the Pew Center for Arts and Heritage. Common Space includes a monthly broadcast and podcasts available on iTunes and Stitcher. Please subscribe. And while you're at it, give us a rating. I'm your host, Jamie J. Thank you so much for listening.